Today we bring you one of our most requested shows. It includes the famed battle in Berkeley between our own Paula Poundstone and food writer Michael Pollan.
From NPR and WBEZ in Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at Cal Performances in Zellerbach Hall in Berkeley, California, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Carl. We are happy to be here in Northern California, where, yes, that's where we are, where 40 or so years ago, everybody was stoned all the time. And that's why they dreamed of a world in which there was only peace and love and happiness and hemp clothing. Then, about 20 years ago, things changed. People here started dreaming about a world in which people used the same little electronic box to order pizza, make friends, and listen to Portuguese fado music on the elliptical machine. And we thought about that and we realized it's the same people. They never went straight, they just got venture capital. So on today's show, we are going to talk about technology, high, low, and really low. It's a special innovation-themed Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You can still play the number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Michelle. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hey, Michelle, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, we're good. What do you do there in Phoenix?
I am a mom, and I'm a political consultant.
A mom slash political consultant.
Correct, yes.
Does your experience dealing with young children help you deal with candidates?
Oh, you would not believe what I have learned from my kids.
Really?
The diapering skills alone.
I know. Just cleaning up after.
So helpful.
What kind of mom are you? Hockey or soccer?
Oh, well, both my kids are still in diapers, so I'm really just more of a...
You can still shoot them across the floor with a stick.
I'll keep that in mind.
Michelle, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to author, humorist, and the man responsible for everything you'll find at Baudette.com, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Tom.
Next, it's the comedian whose new CD, I Heart Jokes, is out on iTunes, Amazon, and her website, PaulaPoundstone.com. Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Paula.
Hey, how are you?
And finally, it's television personality Mo Rocca right there.
Hi, Mo.
Hi, Michelle.
Michelle, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to play Who's Carl this time, but this week, instead of the week's news, all of your quotations will be about brilliant innovations. If you can correctly identify or explain two of these great leaps forward, you will win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. Here is your first quote.
He used to comb the thin strands of hair forward, and of all the honors voted him by the Senate and people, none pleased him so much as the privilege of wearing a laurel wreath. He constantly took advantage of it.
Now that, as I'm sure you know, was the Roman historian Suetonius.
Oh, right, yeah.
He was describing a man some consider to be the father of the comb-over. Mm. Who?
Would that be Julius Caesar?
It was Julius Caesar. What a guy.
Yeah.
Conquered Gaul, overthrew the Roman Republic, gave us a totally kick-ass salad, and now we can credit him with inventing the comb-over, at least that's according to Gersh Kunstmann, author of Hair, Mankind's Historic Quest to End Baldness. He says the Romans in particular were terrified of losing their hair. They tried everything from hippo fat to, quote, salves containing the urine of young foals.
Boy, that doesn't work.
I can tell you. Let me... And the smell. Oh, that was a bad period. Anyway, in fact, Caesar was obsessed with his hair, or lack thereof, right up until the moment of his death when he looked up at his assassin and said, "Et tu pay?"
So,
I apologize.
So when
I deserve that. That's fine. That's okay.
Can you imagine how the lives of bald men throughout the millennia would have changed had Caesar just been bald. Left his hair
alone.
I mean, he was Caesar. He could have done whatever he wanted.
I find it kind of amazing to think of Caesar, who we think is truly one of the great men of history, as being so vain and insecure. I mean, all of a sudden I'm picturing him standing there like, does this toga draped this way make me look fat?
Makes you wonder how it might have influenced like architecture. I mean, if he had Rome built so that people couldn't really look down on the top of his head.
Yeah.
It is. They don't have tall buildings.
Right. No, they did. Yeah. Tall buildings didn't come really until the toupee made the scene. When you think about it, there could be a connection there.
Speaking of great leaders, Michelle, here is a quote from an 1862 speech by Abraham Lincoln.
I believe there is no precedent for my appearing before you on this occasion. But it is also true there is no precedent for your being here yourselves.
Good line, right? Well, right after that apparent big laugh line, in the written copy of the speech, Lincoln used something to indicate he was joking. The first known use in history of what?
Can I have a hint?
Yeah, well, you had to turn, if you really want to get it, you have to turn the paper sideways.
Parentheses?
Parentheses used in a special way with another punctuation. With a
semicolon. Oh, a smiley face.
Right, an emoticon.
Oh my God.
Lincoln, little known fact, Lincoln invented the emoticon.
Wow.
In a transcript of President Lincoln's remarks on that occasion after that surefire laugh line, applause and laughter is noted, followed by a semicolon, then closed parentheses, right? And at least one historian of documents says that then, as today, that symbol was meant to indicate a sideways winking smiley face, an emoticon. We knew that Lincoln was eloquent. It is a surprise to find out he could also be cloyingly annoying.
I'm imagining IMing with Lincoln now.
Were
there any indications of that in the Gettysburg Address?
Well, it does explain something. People have been puzzling about this. In the second inaugural, in the manuscript, right after the famous line, "But let us judge not, that we not be judged," there is the notation in Lincoln's hand, LOL. So,
let's see, it's with malice towards none, yeah. LOL, ROTFLM.
Exactly.
I'd like to see his little IMs to General Meade, you know? WTF.
Yes, exactly. WTF. That's great.
Michelle, for your last innovation, please listen to this advertisement from 1935, read for you by Carl.
Guaranteed. 100% free from splinters.
What product was finally offered squeezably soft and splinter-free?
A hint? please?
Mr. Whipple got splinters in his fingers.
Oh, my God. Wait. Oh, my God.
Oh, a dish sponge? No, wait, Mr. Toilet paper?
Toilet paper, yes, of course, toilet paper.
Oh, what else?
It took till 1935.
Amazingly.
Jeez, what my grandparents went through.
So, yeah, exactly. The next time some television commenter starts telling you that things are just as bad now as the Great Depression, don't you believe it. We're much better off. In 1935, it was the Northern Company that gave mankind another great leap forward, splinter-free bathroom tissue. Took its place along the first sharkless bathtub. The first pants which bent at the knee. And this was important. Fruit of the Loom's historic decision to stop making its underwear from actual fruit. Now, of course, we've moved beyond toilet paper. We do it now with an iPhone app.
The iWipe.
Carl, how did Michelle do on our quiz?
Michelle was perfect, Peter. She wins our prize.
Well done, wow. Michelle. Congratulations.
Thank you
so much for playing.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.